This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Light a tea and let it be. If you a viper.
I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask, and yes, our music is better than yours. That's Aaron McEwen, by the way. Fats Waller recorded that song. Stuff Smith wrote it, by the way, in 1936. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by the Humboldt County Collective, Eco Groovy Deals, Bear Extraction House, and Lost Coast Science. To all of our sponsors, thank you very much. The truth is, we couldn't do it without you. Where we were, where we are, and where we're going sounds simple, doesn't it? But it is anything but that, especially as it concerns the cannabis industry in this county, in this state, and in this country. And that last part, where we're going, really nobody knows. We're going to save that part for the last segment of this hour. Call it the speculative part of the show. We'll ask our guests to take a guess about the future with no enforceable penalties if they're wrong, by the way. With us here in the studio for the next hour are Erica Gray, Senior Operations Director at Permanent Holiday, a manufacturer. Also here is Tara Gurley from the Proper Wellness Center, a Eureka dispensary. Plus, we have here Ross Gordon, who is the Policy Director for the Humboldt County Growers Alliance, and cultivator Ashley Toms from Riverday Farm. Thanks to each one of you for being here. First of all, prior to January 1st, 2018, legalization here in California, none of your jobs existed legally, at least. Cannabis was here, of course. Medical marijuana was legal here, but legal, retail, recreational cannabis was not happening. So the question to start is, where were you and what were you doing prior to 2018? And could you have seen yourself then doing what you're doing now? Who wants to take that first? Tara?
Well, hi. Thank you, first of all, for having us.
Thanks for
here
being
today.
Here.
Yeah, of course. A lot of familiar faces. We sell Permanent Holiday at our location, which is really
good.
Cool.
So, small world, huh?
Small world.
Small industry, in a way.
Yeah. And it really has been for a while. I know a lot of us even operated in the 215 field. And
you did.
I did. Our business was pushing towards a distribution license in 2018. And we're actually the first license for transportation of cannabis goods in the state of Cali. So
you were in the 215 business prior to 2018.
Yeah, we were. I was working, doing a lot of demo for brands up and coming at the time. I was going to High Times, going to Kushtok. Mm-hmm.
Could you foresee legalization in California?
I'm interested at that, and like inspired, obviously, by how it's taken hold and really been accepted. There was clubs operating.
Yeah.
HCC, one of the sponsors of the show tonight, HPRC, they were all here, and it's just been really awesome, like being part of it and witnessing it for California and the world.
How many years were you working in it in the 215? I think 96 was 215.
Yeah, I came out, I worked demo for a few brands in California and sourced here in Humboldt, and it just came naturally to get that transportation license, because that's what we were doing, was taking Humboldt and taking it all over California. Mm-hmm. So I didn't foresee us having a dispensary here in Humboldt, no.
Did you?
This is Erica Gray with Permanent Holiday. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of conversation over the last 10 years leading up to where we are now. Yeah. And I did foresee having retail shops, and that would be, I definitely think that the 215 and the California ways were paving the way even for Colorado and the states that went to legalization before us from a recreational standpoint. I personally been in Humboldt more than around 20 years, and just always intrigued with cannabis, even from a young age. Never really understood, like, you know, not being able to grow a plant I just always didn't resonate with me. I didn't understand, like, wait, it's a plant. That doesn't make sense. So
were you working in this business in the 215 era before you were?
I was involved in the 215 era with personal garden, as well as I have a planning and compliance background. Mm-hmm. I'm a HSU graduate. I do a lot of environmental planning work, dealt with a lot of illegal cultivation sites and dealing with the environmental degradation of that, looking at the water issues, so was kind of in it from all aspects. And
did you foresee it becoming legal in California?
I felt that from when I was 16 years old, smoking a joint, that it was inevitable for sure.
At least in this state.
In the West. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the Northeast, and I knew it wasn't going to happen there. Mm-hmm. But I definitely felt west of the Rockies, something was going to budge in my lifetime. So
Ashley.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for having me on here, Chuck.
Yeah. Thanks for being here.
This is Ashley Toms from River Day Farm, and I've been involved in cannabis cultivation for a long time, since before legalization. I grew up farming organically here in Humboldt County.
Okay.
I'm a local. I studied soil science and natural resource planning at Humboldt State, and cultivating cannabis is a natural progression of my skill set here, and so I had involvement with cultivation under the 215 era for 20 years, now I'm licensed in Humboldt County. I have a full permit, a full license with the state, and that's been a hurdle,
the
least.
Huh? Yeah, we're going to get into all the regulations and the 23-hour days or whatever. Ross, you're policy director for the Humboldt County Growers Alliance. What were you doing before 2018?
So I just moved out to California a little over 4 years ago.
From
Atlanta.
Ah, okay.
And I was a teacher in Atlanta, so I had nothing to do with this whole thing for a while. And then 4 years ago, I wanted a change of pace. I wanted to do something else. I moved to California, and I found work at a law firm that was doing cannabis law under the Prop 215 framework, basically. So,
are you an attorney?
I'm not an attorney. Okay. I started basically just answering phones, receptionist, that kind of work. And they were helping people form collectives under Prop 215, and so I saw a lot of the people coming through the office, and from someone who wasn't from here, it was really a different experience, because the people who came into our office looked like the people of California. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just looked like anyone. They didn't look like what you see in other industries, a couple of wealthy white people who seem to be running everything. Right. And so that really made an impression on me working there. And it was a fortunate place to be, because it allowed me to be, as regulations were being developed and as laws were being developed, I sort of had a front row seat to see how that worked. Over time, the policy side of it really interested in me, because I think there was and is an attempt to build an industry that does things better, that has a place for small business, that has a place for a diversity of people. And that's really what's driven me over the past couple of years. I just moved to Humboldt 6 months ago. I'm extremely happy to be here.
You were in the Bay Area? Or?
I was in Oakland, when I first moved here. Yeah.
But you were a teacher in Atlanta?
Yep.
What were you teaching?
I was a debate coach, actually.
Really? At a high school? Or?
I worked for a nonprofit that did debate education in public schools throughout
Atlanta. Ah, I see.
So we were going to different schools and teaching middle and high school kids, mostly. Just debate and advocacy and that set of skills.
Was there ever a debate about cannabis legalization in the South?
Just after I left, there was for an entire year, actually, people were debating cannabis legalization. Yeah. And it's fun, people do a lot of research, and I think people came to understand over the course of that year that there were so many questions about how cannabis should be legalized, that mm-hmm. it wasn't just should it be legalized, but what does that look like? Who does that benefit?
Bringing a once illegal commodity to the legal market is a huge undertaking, as we found out, as you know, right?
Yeah.
And there's still more work to do.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a lot of work and a lot more work to come.
How has reality? How do you compare reality now to what your expectations were? What kind of expectations did you have? Let's start with our cultivator.
Okay.
Did you have a legalize it bumper sticker?
We were a little more hesitant about what Prop 64 was going to bring to us, because it was written in a way that was, you know, we were not sure what that was going to bring, so a little more wary of it.
Did you expect this to be an easy transition or not?
No. No, I mean, a few years ago when this was coming on, you know, if you remember, the economy, you know, here was going through some trying times. The price of cannabis was dropping significantly, and nobody knew what was going to happen next. Nobody knew if, you know, if the price was going to keep dropping and we wouldn't be able to have a Humboldt County cannabis industry if it kept going lower and lower.
Right.
And so now it feels like there's something there, and we are building something, and we're still not sure where it's going.
So you were for legalization or not?
I'm absolutely pro legalization of cannabis. Okay. Absolutely against jailing anybody for an herb. Yes.
Yeah. Erica.
Yeah. I definitely feel
what were your
that
expectations.
Well, pro legalization from the criminalization aspect of it. Just recognizing that criminalization of cannabis is wrong, and witnessed it creating serious scenarios for friends and minority communities. So I really felt, and also just safe access from a medical perspective, seeing people really struggling and using cannabis to help them with their health conditions and not having consistent access of safe products. So, but my expectations, I assume there'd be a lot of hiccups in the system. I didn't think the process was going to be perfect or smooth from the start. But I definitely was surprised with some aspects of the regulations and the challenges with distribution channels. I mean, specifically talking from a manufacturer and a brand, there's definitely a lot of surprises in how challenging it is to actually get our product to shelf, and especially as a small manufacturer. And, you know, there was a lot of talk with Prop 64 coming down the line of protecting cottage industry, and I don't see that playing out. So that for me was definitely one of the major, like, whoa, this is not working.
That's a big concern.
And a huge concern for the cultivators.
Welcome to Ferndale. That is that's the siren on top of this radio station.
Oh my gosh.
What a great place.
To go off what she was saying, you know, when we did vote for Prop 64, it was sold that it was going to protect, you know, legacy cottage growers, that it was going to be small farms only until 2023.
And a lot of that was written into it.
It was the intent and the wording of the proposition.
July 20. 2018, a lot of it changed.
It was changed in the regulations. The proposition absolutely intended for that to be the case, and that's what we voted for. No one was supposed to be able to stack licenses. That wasn't what the intention was. And now that's not what's happened.
Go ahead, Chair. By the way, this lasts 1 minute, so we're almost done. Go ahead. We know that.
No, we're locals. The founders at Proper Wellness Center were all operating similar, and like the struggles that they went through with the licensing, we experienced that as well. It's like just we put all in on this what they call pilot program sometimes when they refer to it, and it's really challenging to feel that. Even, you know, I expected some sort of consistency or security. What I've got is not that. It's always like this emotional roller coaster. We're always getting new regulations, and our farmers, our suppliers are always struggling as well to hang 10, as it were, with all these new regs. And I think you invited like a great panel here, because having the manufacturer with the cultivator as well as a resource like Humboldt County Growers, you know, he says he just came over here 4 years ago. People like us who are challenged with the license are so appreciative of organizations like Humboldt County Growers Association.
They do a lot of good work, don't they?
Yes. Yeah. They really help us like wield and and navigate all these new things every day and keep us informed. So
without a resource like that, Ross, these folks would, what would they do? I mean, where would you even go?
I think everyone's really challenged by the level of complexity, and I don't think anyone ever could have, well, not, I mean, I don't think anyone anticipated just how much complexity there is, even just taking track and trace. I mean, track and trace is a full-time job. Track and trace is impossibly complicated, and that's one of 100 things that that are new things. And I think every single person who's doing this, whether you're in a policy or sort of compliance position like I am, or whether you're just a farmer, you have to learn everything. Everything about starting a business, everything about contracts, about insurance, about all of it. And
a law degree would not even be enough. You would also need to be a CPA and an MBA and everything else, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And, you know, I was in a law firm at the time, worked at a law firm at the time this was legalized. The lawyers are just as confused as everyone.
I was just going to ask. having worked in a law firm, you know the overwhelming amount of information and work, that the long hours that attorneys put in. Compare this to that. Just as complex?
Compare
what you have to do policy-wise for the Growers Alliance to the amount of work that comes into a law firm.
I think it's, in a lot of ways, it's comparable. Yeah. I mean, they're different types of jobs, but in terms of, you know, I think whether, again, you're a lawyer, you're a policy person, you're a farmer, you're a manufacturer, you have to know everything. And that's the real challenge. And lawyers distribute that information a different way than we distribute that information as a trade association. Sure. So there's different dynamics, but what you have to know, everyone has to know everything, and it's a huge challenge.
Here's another question for you. As a policy person, do you at the Growers Alliance pay attention to what's going on, not just in other counties in California, but in states like Colorado and Washington and Oregon and Michigan and Vermont? Do the states that have moved this far along so far have a lot of communication or no?
I think that communication is just starting right now. I think in California, everyone is very focused for the first couple years of this on just figuring out what was going on here. Yep. I think increasingly now people are starting to look up and see that there are also things going on in other states, and also that the federal government is moving closer to legalization. And I know you want to
talk about speculative stuff
later.
We are going to get to that. Interesting. We're going to go to a break here real quickly, but just one more follow-up on that. We've talked with a lot of people in other states, specifically Colorado and Washington, a lot on this show. One of the things that we find that's a little different here is simply the size of California. 40 million people here, almost, compared to relatively small states that don't have nearly the complexity, not as many counties, not as many local jurisdictions that have their own little regulations. It seems to me, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, it seems to me that it's more complex in California because it's California.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely more complex here. I mean, California has a reputation as just being a stronger regulatory state for anything in general.
Fifth largest economy in the world now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the political diversity in California is unbelievable. I mean, you know, we have this part of the state, which has a certain politics. You have the Bay Area, you have Los Angeles, you have the Central Valley. And each of those states have a very different set of interests and different approach to things.
Different agenda in each area.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, we have local control, too. And so each of these cities and counties, and we have, I think, 600 of them in California, set their own rules. So it's a huge amount of complexity.
And there may be adjacent communities that have totally different views on this. We did a show on Fortuna and Rio Del, completely different directions they're going in. Mm-hmm. So, okay, we're going to keep going on this. After a quick break, we're going to dig into the debate about the future of the cannabis industry here, there, and everywhere. We'll be back in just a moment. This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
Welcome to this month's edition of the Cannabis Calendar, brought to you by the Humboldt Chronicles. The calendar features information on upcoming cannabis-related conferences and events that take place within a day's drive of Humboldt County. For people interested in working in the cannabis industry as a bud tender, Clear Horizon Management Group is presenting a one-day seminar near Roseville on December 7th called Bud Tender Basics. This seminar is geared towards those who want to enhance their skills, brand ambassadors, those who want to enter the cannabis industry, and cultivators who want to better understand the end-user experience to help them promote their product. Details available at potguide.com. In early December, the MJ BizCon Conference and Expo takes place in Las Vegas. Held December 11th through the 13th at the Las Vegas Convention Center, the MJ BizCon bills itself as the largest gathering of cannabis business professionals in the world, anticipating up to 35,000 attendees. The event featured numerous focus sessions, an investor meet and greet, and a keynote address by Netflix founding CEO Mark Randolph. More information is available at mjbizconference.com. Finally, the 2019 Emerald Cup will take place the weekend of December 14th and 15th at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds in Santa Rosa, with a B2B mixer on Friday, December 13th. The event includes an extensive lineup of speakers and musical guests, including Santa Gold, Steel Pulse, and Emancipator, as well as the multi-category cannabis competition. Get all the details at theemeraldcup.com. If you'd like to have your event listed on the cannabis calendar, email us the details at studio@humboldtchronicles.com.
Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. If you're just joining us, as we approach the two-year anniversary of legal recreational retail cannabis in California, we're looking at where we were, where we are, and where we might be going cannabis-wise. With us here in the studio are Erica Gray from Permanent Holiday, Tara Gurley from the Proper Wellness Center, Ross Gordon with the Humboldt County Growers Alliance, and Ashley Toms from Riverdale Farm. Late 90s and early 2000s, as we were discussing in our first segment here, you had to make an appointment with a physician known to be willing to write cannabis prescriptions under the Prop 215 guidelines, then pay sometimes hundreds of dollars for an office visit, then take the prescription to one of very few places around to get cannabis. Relatively limited choices. Where we are now, you just walk into a dispensary and a bud tender helps you select from pre-rolls, gummies, vaping products, or cannabis for your dog. The question is it working from your standpoint so far? Tara?
You know, our mission was always to provide quality, good medicinal products to the good people here in Humboldt County. And I really... what you just mentioned was limited choices. Mm-hmm. So that was always an issue for us, even as users, as connoisseurs, or people who needed it to help us, you know. There just wasn't good quality medicine, you know, there wasn't good choices, there wasn't access, and there was great farmers.
Oh, yeah.
There was great farmers, and it just wasn't available here for people to pick up in a safe environment.
Right. And now there is.
And now there's plenty of choices, yeah.
Is it working so far?
Yeah, I agree with Tara. I think safe access is definitely one of the perks and benefits of what legalization has done. I also think just education for consumers. There's, like, such an easier platform now to educate people on the type of product that they're purchasing, terpenes, you know, we're learning so much more about our own human systems and how the plant interacts with those systems, and just pushing the science, pushing people to ask questions, pushing people to understand that it's more about than just getting high. Like, there's, you know, just really recognizing all the benefits of this plant that, and also just allowing for more research, whether it's not happening at the university level yet, but, like, just the farmers are doing more research on integrated pest management. And as manufacturers, we're constantly doing R&D to come up with, like, the best quality to put out to market. So I just think that, yeah, it's allowing for a lot more education.
Ashley, is it working?
Yeah. I want to play off what Erica just said about the testing and regulations that we're doing now, and that is one thing I would like to point to that I really appreciate about legalization, is that the products that you're getting in legal dispensaries now are tested. Mm-hmm. And before, we learned that there was actually a lot of really gnarly things going on you know, black market farms that aren't happening anymore, from what I gather. It was a lot more information sharing, and that means a safer product.
And that's all to the good.
Yeah.
Ross, just to follow up on that, during the break we were talking about other states like Colorado. One of the folks that we've talked to has mentioned more than once that the way that some of the legislative initiatives have passed in many states has to do with the issue of safety. So is that, from your standpoint as the policy guy here, is it working? Is it Do you sense that what they've been saying, safety is a big concern, and that it's working in that area?
Yeah, I think from a safety perspective, I think that's one of the best points of the new system, as mm-hmm. I think everyone here has just mentioned. California in particular, I think we have the strongest testing rules of any state.
We do.
We really test these products for their cleanliness, and in some ways that can be burdensome, but I think overall it at least makes me feel good that we can guarantee that our products are safe, are clean, and are produced at a very high level.
Right.
And I think it's great for Humboldt County as well, because we know how to, you know, produce.
We can point to that.
Yeah, and we can show we produce the highest quality products of anywhere.
Well, let's follow on that. Here is a question that underlies a lot of this. Is it realistic to expect that all unregulated cannabis will either be eliminated or, if not eliminated, kept out of the regulated market? Who wants to take that? That's not an easy one.
I think it's unrealistic. This mm-hmm. is Erica. Until there's an end to federal prohibition, I think there will always be an unregulated market mm-hmm. as long as there's states that do not have access. I can't really speak to whether it... I think that there needs to be more done to keep it out of the regulated market within the state of California.
Track and trace still needs work, by the way.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this because, you know, we produce vape cartridges, and obviously yeah. everyone knows about the vape crisis.
In the news.
And high well, in the
welcome
news.
Welcome to the show.
Exactly. It's really been an opportunity for our company to teach people what, you know, safe products are, and because we are 100% cannabis oil, mm-hmm. you know, it's actually been a great opportunity. Sad what's happening across the nation, but also pointing to why you want to buy from a licensed yeah. shop. Unfortunately, there's still a lack of integrity in a percentage of the regulated businesses, mm-hmm. and I think that's just going to happen in business, and I think those businesses will not be successful long term, but as long as there's still a gray area with yep. people still coming on board to Metric,
and as long as they're still making money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
I can tell you have a thought on that, Tara.
Well, I think a lot about these things because we distribute to directly to clients, right? Lots of different brands, and we're always looking for the best, like always looking for one people with knowledge.
Sure.
People from our community we do definitely respect and think have like the utmost knowledge in our field. And we know a lot of statewide manufacturers and stuff that look towards this region mm-hmm. for that. And I think that it's so interesting that tobacco products are available in the vaping method or non-tobacco or anything, because a cannabis oil is so good for you. Take in lots of different ways, whether it is an edible, a tincture, mm-hmm. whether it's actually the oil when you smoke the flower, or how their products are in a vape cartridge. That is an elite product. It's like really good for you. It's not tobacco and other flavors and things like that are so bad for you.
Yeah, right.
It's like Doritos and Skittles, you know?
There you go.
And I just, I'm interested. It's just inspiring. That cannabis has made it this far, that we're neck and neck with something that is so bad for you, and we're trying to bring something that's so good for you.
There's hope.
There's hope.
Let's go to our cultivator on this question. Ashley, it was either yesterday or the day before, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office released some statistics from the last 12 months. Maybe you saw this. A little over 200,000 plants eradicated. We're talking about the unregulated market here. A little over 200,000 plants eradicated, 39,000 pounds of processed product destroyed, dozens of firearms seized, 16 arrests, I believe it was. So they're working on it. But what are your thoughts as a cultivator on the unregulated market and where it goes? And let me throw one more wrinkle in. I think we're, 100 years now past prohibition being lifted. And still, as people on this program have pointed out before, there's still folks in the hills of North Carolina making moonshine. So it may never be completely gone, but at what point do you think it will be not making its way into the regulated market?
Well, from my perspective, you know, the barriers to entry into being a licensed cultivator are so great that a lot of farmers here have not, they haven't had the opportunity to be brought into the fold.
But so they would?
I think many of them would if they had the opportunity and if the barrier to entry wasn't so expensive.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was looking at my notes earlier today about what it took me to get to this place, you know, who I had to hire to get here. I did all of my own permitting, so I didn't pay somebody to do that for me, but I still had to hire a surveyor, mm-hmm. a soil scientist, a geologist, an engineer, a forester. You know,
all expensive.
Yeah, there's essentially, you know, so a form of environmental persecution happening on cannabis farmers here that we're being held to a standard that other farmers, like in Sonoma and Napa, grape growers, they're not being held to. And the standard is really, really high, and the barriers are really great. And it's not necessarily necessary if you compare it with other, you know, farming standards.
Right.
So I think that those farmers absolutely would participate in the legal marketplace if that were an opportunity for them.
Well, let's go to the policy person and ask him, what do we do about that, Ross? Or what is it being talked about?
Yeah, so I think the barriers to entry are definitely something that have been discussed a lot. And, you know, we do have over 1,000 farmers in the Emerald Triangle who have managed to make it into the regulated market. So it's not that, you know, nobody is able to make it, but I think there are a lot of people who would like to be in the regulated market who aren't able to do that. Ashley spoke about some of the environmental issues. Tax, I think, is another really big one. You know, the taxes in California are the second highest of any cannabis legal state for a state that has this very developed existing illicit market. I think it can be difficult to convince people they want to make that leap. Another is retail access. So we have, I think, 800 legal retailers in the entire state of California, which is roughly the same amount as Oregon and as Colorado. So we really don't have the retail access that you would expect in a state like California. So there's a lot of different...
So that keeps customers going to the unregulated market.
Even where I used to live in Oakland, and Oakland obviously is a big cannabis capital of the country, culturally in some ways, but the nearest dispensary to my home was 3-4 miles away, which isn't, you know, super far away, but is...
For some people it is.
So, it took probably, you know, an hour to make that trip there and back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the better situations. There are large parts of the state where there's no access within dozens of miles.
Is that a problem with Sacramento or county supervisors or local jurisdictions or all three?
It's a little bit of everything. Prop 64 constrains a lot of what can be done around cannabis policy. And Prop 64, a big central part of that was local control.
Mm-hmm.
And local governments have been slow to permit retail. I think they're stepping up a little bit. I think there was a little bit of a feeling that nobody wanted to be first. Nobody wanted to...
Let's see how this goes.
Yeah. And you know, Humboldt County was the first because Humboldt County knew it
is Humboldt County
the first. But for, you know, an area that maybe doesn't have such a history with cannabis, it looks like this big complicated issue that takes a bunch of county resources or city resources to figure out. And so I think that's one big reason that things have been so slow. Hopefully things will start picking up.
Yeah, Trinity County is a great example of retail shops just came online. They just did the permitting process for that. And I think there's I can't remember how many farms. You might have statistics on that, but there's a lot of licensed farm and no retail shop in Trinity County.
In Trinity County.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's piggyback on that. Is it important then for Humboldt businesses in this industry, Humboldt County businesses, to have a presence in other parts of the state? We know that there are some businesses here that have opened up other operations in other parts of the state, particularly Southern California. Is that important? And kind of related to that, what about appellations? Is that going to help? Where are we on all of this? First of all, expansion into other parts of the state, important or not?
I think it's very important that we are noticed and recognized on a scale like on that tier. You know, Humboldt County farmers are, and should be on a pedestal in this industry. That's how I view this flower. You know, I go statewide and see all these strains. We bring them back if they're not from Humboldt and they're the best. They're at Proper Wellness Center. But we have a whole case dedicated to just Humboldt County cannabis. It's the first case when you walk in our store.
And do people go there?
Of course. Some people stop there. And we've got 6 more cases, but they only want Humboldt County flower.
Do you have folks who buy only from there?
Absolutely.
Really? Do you hear from retailers in other parts of the state that the Humboldt brand is as attractive in their stores as it is here?
They're making waves, and you know, even unrecognized, a lot of the flower that they were buying, even at those unregulated shops, was from Humboldt County. Mm-hmm. It's the best place to grow, and it's where everyone was sourcing even then. So it's just about getting our, like you say, Appalachian mm-hmm. recognized mm-hmm. that is that smell, that is that taste.
Right.
It's Humboldt.
And does the Humboldt brand, Erica, still have, I mean, what's it worth, or do we even know yet?
Yeah, no, I think there's huge value in getting Humboldt on the map. I think it's crucial. I think it's a win for the entire community here, everybody that's in this and licensed. Sharing the resources to get us on the map in Southern California, you know, I've gotten a lot of just conversation of, like, really when you go down to L.A., like, a lot of people don't even know about the Humboldt brands, like, unless they're in, you know, they're just looking for, you know, whatever's thrown in front of them at the right. best price point. And a lot of people are taking Humboldt County flower and white labeling it and saying it's being produced from an L.A., you know, I mean, the branding is, like, we could talk about that all day, too.
Well, so. And there's so many things about that market, too. There are people moving in and out of Los Angeles all the time.
All the time.
There are people there who didn't even grow up in this state. A lot. There's also the transportation problem there. Maybe they're going to buy from a retailer that's reasonably close to where they live, and they're not going to drive all the way across that city on the 405 or something to go get something that just because it's from Humboldt. So
exactly,
there are all
yeah.
kinds of issues in that market.
Yeah, and I think that you have to recognize, you know, marketing 101 is you have to know, like, who you're marketing to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have these different, like, subsets of people. And, yes, there's a person who just wants the cheapest right. thing and the closest thing, and then there's the people that are seeking out the quality.
Exactly.
And I think those are the type of people that us as Humboldt County businesses need to go after together and maintain that boutique. You know, you can buy the Carlo Rossi thumb jug at the grocery store, or you can buy the bottle of Cab from Napa. Like,
right.
it's the same concept across the board.
Or buy it in a box.
In the box. but I do think that it is really important that Humboldt gets on the map, but I think that we are only going to be able to do it together. Mm-hmm. I don't think that one brand, no matter how good you are and how much your Instagram has followers, is going to make it unless we all do it together.
Right.
So stronger together is always the thing that Permanent Holiday, we're constantly trying to collaborate and partner and work with our local resources before we mm-hmm. move outside and bring our connections, you know, our founders from the Bay Area, they have lots of connections in the city and in LA, and just trying to bring those connections back to Humboldt.
Right.
HTGA's event that they just did, House of Humboldt, like, awesome concept. I hope that we can continue to take that show on the road and really showcase the people that we are, the story we have to tell, because mm-hmm. I think at this point, that is the value that we have, along with, and then the quality to match it. So.
Well, let's ask the cultivator who produces some of that product about the Humboldt brand. And go ahead.
Well, there is no Humboldt brand if we don't support our farmers, and we need to help our farmers grow and do well here mm-hmm. in the political climate and in our climate, no matter what it is. you know, it's all based, everything is coming from the farm. You know, the whole industry is built off of the farm, and actually, in more ways than one, you know, we're producing the product and also often asked to front this product out, you know, to the next step and the next step, and we're seeing it all kind of on our shoulders, and I want to see us, you know, be able to come together and cooperate to support the farmers to make it through this process.
Do you think the Humboldt brand is worth enough that's going to really help the small farmers stay in this game?
I think that in Humboldt County, you know, we have generational knowledge of this plant. Mm-hmm. We have institutional knowledge of this plant.
Maybe more than anywhere.
probably more than anywhere. And I'd like to see us support that moving forward, that we're not draining that knowledge out of the area so that, you know, it's going into these big corporate farms in Southern California or Michigan or wherever else is opening up, that we are building here and building our economy here and able to forward that product, you know, to the next level where people can see and recognize our product.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back in our last segment, we're going to take a look at the future, and we're going to mine the thoughts of this panel about what we can expect in 2020 and beyond. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. So, where in the world are we going? What do we know? Do we even know what we don't know? Well, we're going to ask our panel about the industry and where it may be going in 2020 and maybe even beyond. If you're just joining us, with us here in the studio are Erica Gray from Permanent Holiday, Tara Gurley from the Proper Wellness Center, Ross Gordon from the Humboldt County Growers Alliance, and Ashley Toms from Riverday Farm. So we only have a few minutes. We want to get to a couple of really important topics that would take an hour each anyway, but we want to talk about what's been in the news in the last few days, and that is that a bill that would federally legalize cannabis nationally has made it out of a House committee and is presumably on its way to the floor of the House of Representatives. Of course, then it would need to go to the Senate and ultimately to the President. But at least it is it has legs, it looks like. It's moving along, at least, which is news in this industry. Let's start with Ross about policy. What do you know about that bill? What do you hear about it? And what would it mean to go into yet another transition period? We've just been through one with state legalization. Federal legalization would be another transition period. What do you know?
So it's incredibly exciting, obviously, that a cannabis legalization bill, a full-scale cannabis legalization bill, has passed out of a House committee.
Right.
And there's a long way for that to go. It would need to get through the full House. It would need to get through the Senate. It would need the President's signature. And it's not going to happen this year.
Right.
But it is amazing to see it pass. And one thing that is really exciting about that bill is that it doesn't just legalize cannabis. It also includes funds for reinvestment into communities that were impacted by the war on drugs.
Right.
And so I think the federal government is starting to shift this conversation a little bit, again, from just whether we should legalize cannabis. And the conversation is starting to happen more, how should it be legalized? What does that look like? Mm-hmm. How do you incorporate the communities that were impacted by prohibition? So I know, you know, we've started, as HCGA, have started to enter that conversation a little bit, and we're looking ahead a little bit to what federal legalization and interstate commerce might look like. And there's a lot that could be said about it, but one of our really big priorities is going to make sure that Humboldt is protected in that, and the name of Humboldt, and mm-hmm. You mentioned, I think, Appalachians a little bit earlier, that you know, other states, other regions won't be able to say that cannabis is produced in Humboldt if it's not, and we have some way to differentiate the product.
Hugely
that's,
important.
That's made here.
Do you know if that bill, I have not read it, but do you know if that, I believe that bill was actually introduced by the Judiciary Chairman, Jerry Nadler, from New York. Do you know, since it came from him, I'm guessing it may include something about expungement of records for people who have been, does anybody know whether that's included?
Yeah, I just read a brief summary on it today, but expungement of records was included, mm-hmm. and the MORE Act, and expungement is the E in that, I believe.
Mm-hmm. That's a really important aspect, is the recognition for these people who have been victims of this prohibition, like you say, and like affected and just unimaginable ways.
With that on your record, there are issues about even applying for jobs, filling out an application, and having to check the have you ever been convicted of anything, you know, all of that, which
people are still in prison today.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it would open brand new doors for people. It would, if passed in some form, it would put everybody in this business into a whole new period of transition. Are we ready?
Well, we are getting ready.
And, how?
Well, I think Proper Wellness Center, as retailers, we really hope to preserve the Humboldt County essence and, like, not let our community or what it was built on, this 30-plus years of knowledge on this industry, just be dissipated and oversaturated as this hits the market globally. Proper Wellness Center wants to put Humboldt County as a whole on the map. If you come in our store, above our logo, there's 11 Humboldt County licenses. Manufacturers, farmers, 10 of them are farmers who made it through these regulations. Like, five of those are legacy farmers. Their parents or now their children cultivate cannabis for them. It's just
that's a win.
Inspiring. Yeah. So we hope to, like, give that view of our community to the world. So I hope that people, if you haven't been to Proper Wellness Center, that you guys come by. If you're a cultivator here in Humboldt and you aren't on our shelves, please come by and, like, let's chat and see how we can get people recognizing your brand and what we're really doing for this movement.
Cultivator Ashley, what would federal legalization mean to a farmer? Would it and you tell me, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but do you think about, do I have to get bigger? Do I have to grow more? Am I going to be able to sell my product out of the state of California, all over the country, all over the world? Cool. Do you think about things like that?
Yeah, of course I do. The whole United States is a very large market.
Yeah.
And California grows the best cannabis.
Yeah.
So are
you looking at this as a good thing or?
Absolutely.
Nervous?
I mean, the best cannabis comes from California.
Okay.
You know, no matter what happens with growing elsewhere.
Yeah.
We can grow the best cannabis here. That's a huge market for us. The Humboldt brand you were speaking of earlier really does carry some more weight in the rest of the country because everybody knows the best cannabis comes from Humboldt County.
So this could be a good thing, even though it would mean that people in Kansas could start growing, right? So there would be more competition.
They can try.
I like that. That should be your business motto there after this happens. Now, Erica, you mentioned connections with the Bay Area. Are those folks thinking about, okay, what do we do? How do we position ourselves? How do we prepare for federal legalization?
You know,
what do you hear?
Well, as a company, like, Permanent Holiday has always been, like, more than cannabis. It's a mindset. Our team is always thinking big picture, thinking nationally, thinking globally. And we see it in the course of our lifetimes, and we want to be prepared for that. And taking advantage of this, you know, putting Humboldt on the map and taking that outside the state. There is some opportunities, and we're seeing a lot of local companies do that, and they are branding with hemp outside of California. And I think it's a smart move for these smaller companies to get on the shelves of Saks Fifth Avenue, shout out Kiskanoo. They've done a really great job of... They're in Anthropology, you know, doing their CBD hemp thing. And so their name is out there. So it's just a matter of time. And when we move to more states coming on board and federal, you know, coming on board, I think if we as brands have really established ourselves, it'll be a much easier transition than kind of just waiting and then trying to, like, leapfrog into that space.
I like this optimism. I didn't know what I was going to get when we included this in the show. Ross, you spoke recently to the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors about something that Erica just raised, and that's the issue of hemp. What do we think about hemp?
So hemp is a extremely complicated issue.
Yeah.
And we
only have 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's been super challenging. I mean, it's probably the issue that I've spent the most time on as a policy issue in the past year. But I think, you know, very briefly, hemp and cannabis, when they're grown for THC or CBD, are the same plant. They're both cannabis sativa. They're both grown in the same way. They're both often sold in the same way as tinctures, as pre-rolls, as edibles, as flower. And yet there's two vastly different regulatory systems for hemp and for cannabis.
Right.
And that's really where a lot of the challenge comes down to.
Do we think that the two could coexist in Humboldt County?
I think it's possible. I think the Board of Supervisors is continuing to look at it. And we'll see what they end up deciding at their next meeting. But I think because of those vastly different regulatory systems and also the vastly different scales on which hemp is sometimes produced, you know, the county was saying 70 acres is the size of the average hemp farm in California.
Average.
Average size of a hemp farm. There's a lot of details to work through before that can happen.
If it were smaller, though, would some of the issues of one field growing next to another go away, depending upon the size of a farm?
Yeah, absolutely. I think large-scale hemp farms and small-scale hemp farms have very different considerations. Okay. Either way, there's, I think, a lot of concern about parity in terms of regulation. Hemp, no matter what it is right now, has very little regulation in the state of California compared with cannabis, which is one of the most regulated industries in the world.
How expensive 70 acres of cannabis cultivation would cost to regulate.
And
that hemp is just, like he's saying, there's no regulation set in place for it. So that is a completely biased standard that we're that is being held to.
Do you hear of people wanting to get into hemp here in Humboldt County? Or no, I mean, how big of an issue is it in this county? I know we hear about the Central Valley a lot, but what about here?
I think there's some interest. I think the question is, you know, you can grow CBD hemp under a cannabis license or under a hemp permit. And the question is how the county regulates that. Mm-hmm. Cannabis is cannabis. People are interested in hemp because people are interested in cannabis. And the question is how do you approach that, given that there's two very different systems and frameworks governing them?
Okay. Anybody else want to weigh in on the hemp issue?
I think there is some hemp being grown in Humboldt County already.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, in the city of Arcata.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And for what market?
For CBD.
For CBD.
Mm-hmm.
And is it how's it being because there are a lot of issues, right, with things like cross-pollination and things like that, right, or no?
I guess it's on a very small scale.
Small
so
scale.
I think it's the large scale that is worrisome
is the
to
worrisome
the, yeah, the county industry here.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we do know that hemp could replace some of the products that are damaging the environment. So there's a good side to moving into hemp, but finding out how it can coexist.
For pesticides and all the dangers that we're concerned about, they're not being regulated. So
yet.
So having a hemp farm could be very detrimental to our environment.
Unless, like Ross was saying, that we take
it.
All that into consideration and get it right.
Definitely
right?
Should be.
Yeah, okay. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. Thanks to all of our guests for being here, and we also want to say a huge thank you to our sponsors, the Humboldt County Collective, Eco Groovy Deals, Bear Extraction House, and Lost Coast Science. We'll be back with the Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on the third Wednesday of each month, so that means we will see you next time, December the 18th at 6 p.m.